solar panels work in winter. Solar energy output in Australia throughout winter is surprisingly high in some cities. You can learn more about better solar energy at B-Solar. Visit B.Solar to learn more. GLG Greenlife Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. Welcome to the First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. A big hello and welcome. Brett Phillips with you again for another week covering the world of tennis. And the invitation is always there to join me tonight. 1-300-736-736. You dial that number, you'll get on, have a chat around our guest tonight. You can put anything you like on the tennis agenda. The Tennis Direct text that is here as well, 0433 98 11 16. Tennis Direct, of course, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery if you order up over $150. Go to their website. You can shop while you listen tonight. TennisDirect.com.au. Get their 10% discount. Punch in the code FIRSTSERVE10. On the B-Solar menu tonight, your calls. We're going to head to Indian Wells. John Tricky, for those in the tennis family, needs no introduction. A little bit of Ilya Marchenko coming up tonight. The latest on the Australian Open. If you do want to find out and ask me any questions about the Australian Open through the show, you can text those in 0433 98 11 16, but I'll give you a lowdown a little bit later on. But the week on tour, thanks to Yonex, celebrating 75 years performance product crafted in Japan. Check out their latest range at yonex.com.
It's Muguruza's title, champion in Chicago, her second trophy of the season, and she's come all the way back to beat the Tunisian. That's what they keep doing. You lose the first set, but you win the match. That's happened every time they've played, and this time Muguruza overturning Jabeur.
Alison van der Vank is the inaugural Astana Open champion here in Nur-Sultan. She keeps her incredible 100% record in WTA finals.
Casper Ruud smiling in the San Diego sunshine. It's another trophy for this remarkable young Norwegian as he continues to put together a season to remember. A fifth ATP Tour title this year, the sixth of his career.
Casper Ruud.
And after all the success on the clay, this is his first title on the hard courts. As he soaks up the applause, he is a winning machine right now.
A successful title defence. Jannik Sinner quite superb over the course of the whole week, and particularly with the title on the line. He wins Sofia without dropping a set. Jannik Sinner on the march towards the top 10, towards the end of the season, and about to lift the trophy here in Bulgaria.
The champions indeed of the last week on tour. Let's give you a little bit of a brief rundown. Garbiñe Muguruza, regal, tall in the court. She put on a very, very good show, particularly coming back from a set and a breakdown on Jabeur. We love on Jabeur. Shane Leonard, good friend of the program, might be listening in tonight, data-driven sports analytics. Nice little plug for you, Shane. Done a lot of good work with Ons. And she looked to be in the driver's seat. 6-3, 4-2, storming back was Muguruza. 3-6, 6-3, 6-love. So her second title this year, ninth the WTA career title, up three spots to world number six. She's 37 and 14 for the year, Garbiñe Muguruza. So a nice job done by her. Maddie Inglis, the best-performed Australian in the Chicago Classic on the WTA. A 500 in the last week. Had a real opportunity against Belinda Bencic. Took the first set and then was, well, the scoreline certainly showed an obliteration after that. 6-1, 6-love. But took a set, but we'd love to see the Australians certainly challenging a little deeper. Tom Janovic and Cabrera went out pretty early in the piece. Pesky and Petkovic won the doubles. Of course, Kvitova Pesky been playing a little bit of doubles with Ellen Perez this year. Alison van Uytvanck, very nice job, against Yulia Putintseva. Remember Yulia at quarantine time? The Australian Open, she had the mouse in her room. She wasn't very happy with that. In fact, if you go on YouTube, Yulia Putintseva, there's two files. the damning file, the ultimate complainer. There's 22 minutes worth of content there, and it's not the WTA tennis. Sorry, is the most W is the most. What am I actually going to read my handwriting? Is the most like WTA tennis player. That goes for 3 minutes. So maybe that tells you something. But Alison van Utvang, very nice job. Fifth career title, fourth indoors, perfect finals record. Of course, she came from a set down, was 0-4 against the Kazakh coming in. World number 89, so she's jumped 34 spots to 55 in the world. And I've got a feel tonight for a man that everyone knows very well in Australian tennis, Peter Johnston, who's been in this studio a number of times, looks after the Kooyong Classic, formerly worked for Tennis Australia, formerly worked for the WTA. He's the tournament director of Zhuhai, St. Petersburg, and also been over at the Astana Open in Kazakhstan the last couple of weeks. Now, Jono was supposed to fly back on Sunday. His plane got cancelled, and he cannot get back to Australia until about November 16. So this is the difficulty, not only with our tennis players, but those in Australian tennis. I know there are some back from the Laver Cup who have been in quarantine over the last week or two, but yeah, not easy. So, Jono, we're feeling for you. Hopefully you can get that sorted out. Just tell them who you are, and I'm sure they'll maybe sneak you through. Just on Kooyong as well, not all hope lost that we might have the Kooyong Classic back for 2022, but more on that as we discuss the Australian Open a little bit later on. Jannik Sinner, very nice job. He's getting taller. Every time I watch him play, he's putting on a few inches. The hair's certainly getting longer. Hasn't been to a barber for a little while. That is the case for most of us, certainly in Melbourne. But Jannik Sinner, great job to beat Monfils, 9-0 in Sofia. So won, of course, back-to-back titles. Third title this year, won the City Open in Washington. The Great Ocean Road Open. Don't know if that'll be back, the Great Ocean Road Open next year. 14 in the world. Monfils, I mean, it's been a pretty good recovery from a pretty ordinary time through COVID. So 17th straight year he has reached a tour final. Still at 18 in the world at the ripe old age of 35. But Jannik Sinner, he's going very nicely. He's on the verge of the top 10 and maybe a chance to sneak in to the 8 for the race to Turin a little bit later on the year for the ATP tour finals. Just on the Australians. So Alex de Minaur, we know, is going through certainly a bit of a lean patch at the moment. Lost to Marcus Giron. Tight match, 7-6, 7-6. Now, his next 4 weeks, he defends a final in a 250, a last 16 at a Masters 1000, and a quarterfinal at a 250. So he's won just 21 matches this year in 20 events. Now, he's 27 in the world at the moment. By year's end, he could certainly slip down to around possibly 40 to 45 in the ranking. So it's a really big few weeks coming up for Alex. I never thought I'd probably say it, not because I don't like the guy, I think he can play, but with all the adversity that James Duckworth has had in his career, there's certainly been stages where you've thought, is he actually going to ever play again with all the injuries that he's had? He could. He could possibly become our number one player. I mean, he's 54 in the world, career high, another quarterfinal in Sofia. It's another really solid week. Gee, give it a few weeks, depending what de Minaur does. Heading into Australia come January, he could be in a very nice position, the Duck. And John Millman, obviously taking a hit, not defending that New Sultan title from 35. He's got 35 spots down to 90 in the world. So, yeah, tough period for John now, who's chasing points at the back end of the year to get himself back. He has got history of been able to finish off years quite strongly. So, yeah, there's a bit to play out there with John Millman, whose ranking has taken a little hiding in the last week or so. Ken Skupski and Johnny O'Mara won the doubles in Sofia. The Skupski's doing very nicely because Neil and Joe Salisbury won in San Diego today, defeating, of course, the Aussie in John Peers and also Filip Polaschek. But how good's Casper Ruud going? There's a lot to like at this. A lot to like about this guy. I mean, the next step is for him to really show his wares at Grand Slam level, Masters 1000 level. He has won a stack of 250s, the most titles of anyone this year. So he's up to 5 titles. He's first on a hard court. He sort of got that tag, has been a little bit of a clay court specialist. Rod Laver was there in San Diego today to present him the trophy. Djokovic has won 4. Medvedev and Zverev have won 4 this year. But Casper Ruud, that is certainly not the scoreline any of us would have predicted. 11-2 against Cam Norrie. He's had a terrific year, the lefty, and They both played in the same Laver Cup team only a week ago, but he's going very nicely. So he's 10 in the world, but we know it's a mighty jump to get up towards the top five and the absolute top echelon. So keen to see what he can produce. And as I mentioned, John Peers, he and Palaszczuk are starting to find their groove after a little bit of a slow start. Only came together really, well, early doors of the US swing. Washington lost a couple of matches, then went on that US Open semi-final run and have claimed, of course, a runner-up at the San Diego Open. So that partnership is proving quite fruitful at the back end of the year. So there's some of the major winners. Damien's in Frankston North. Damien, welcome to the First Serve.
Hey, BP, how are you going?
Good, thank you.
Good. I wanted to talk to you about the Australian Open. Your thoughts on the, you know, Open itself, whether obviously it will go ahead. Hopefully everyone's vaccinated by then, but players refusing to get the vaccine. What are your thoughts on that one, like Novak Djokovic, for instance, BP?
Well, I'm going to save it for probably a little bit later, the full detail, Damien. I'll give you that a little bit later in the show as to what I know, but it's going to be an interesting situation. There's obviously a bit to play out. We know what the Andrews government said last week in terms of domestic sports people, for example, AFL footballers, they're probably going to have the two jabs to get back for pre-season training. But it's been left open in terms of international athletes coming into Australia at this stage. Now, the federal government really is going to have the ultimate say on that. And we know the chief health officers of the various states have their different rules depending on the states. So, yeah, it's a bit to play out. It's a bit to play out, Damo. But I'll give you the full details of what I know a little bit later on. But Djokovic, yeah, has been absolutely steadfast that he doesn't believe anyone should be made to have a vaccine. Stefanos Tsitsipas has also, you know, had plenty to say. But at the same time, he has also said that as soon as they say it's mandated, he will roll the sleeve up and get it done because he wants to travel and play tennis, and that's part of the gig. You're travelling to all these different countries year on year, month after month. So, you know, we'll, like someone said today, you know, will the Australian Open be moved to an easier city to make this whole process just work a bit more smoothly? Well, there's no way the Australian Open will move from Melbourne. It is absolutely locked and loaded here. And if Novak Djokovic at the end of the day says, well, I'm not coming, it's not a total disaster. I mean, we're getting used to no Djokovic at tournaments. We're getting used to no Federer. We're getting used to no Nadal. This is going to happen probably on a more regular occurrence over the next 12 to 18 months, even in Novak's case, as good as he has been. I mean, things are going to happen. Injuries, as you get older, the body doesn't do what you want it to do all year round. So there's, yeah, a little bit to certainly play it in that regard. Let's get an early break away. There's plenty to come on the show tonight. Would love your calls. 1300 736 736. The First Serve. Off and running.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Great to talk the world of tennis with you on a Monday night. Brett Phillips in the chair. 1-300-736-736. Of course, we're powered by B-Solar. You're going to learn more about better solar energy at B-Solar. No more expensive electricity bills. Trusted, guaranteed savings. Free yearly checkups. You can talk with a B-Solar advisor. Search for B-Solar or visit b.solar to learn more. Make sure you check out our website during the week, thefirstserve.com.au, right across our social channels. Plenty of content there for you, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you want your daily tennis fix. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Plenty going up there as well, and you'll have plenty of tennis at your disposal. A couple of results I just need to tidy up. Challengers, always like to mention the Challenger Tour. Henry Laaksonen, the Swiss, got through in France. Hugo Delien, he's the king of Bolivia, got as high as 72. Last year, he is flying the flag for Bolivian tennis. He won in Peru, the challenger on the weekend. Also, Dmitry Popko, the Kazakh, won in Portugal. Thanasi Kokkinakis couldn't quite get over the line late last night up against Stefano Travaglia, the Italian. That was in, of course, Romania, 7-6, 6-2. But This has been a year where he's been incrementally building Thanasi. It's just good to see him back playing some tennis. He's 34-20 win-loss. He's 183 in the rankings. But most importantly, he's played 21 tournaments. So he's been durable, been playing a fair bit on clay, and the building blocks to maybe get back inside the top 100. It's not a given. The game constantly shifts and changes and new talent emerges. But let's hope he gets back there. He is putting in the hard yards this year. And Talon Griekspoor, the Dutchman, got up in Spain in that challenger there. A couple on the text. Is Max Purcell playing in Indian Wells? No, he's actually withdrawn from qualifying. Duckworth is good. LOL. Yes, absolutely. No, he's a very good player. And I'm probably just clarifying what I said before, that maybe I was going to be maybe surprised one day if James Duckworth was our number one Australian. So that's not to certainly diminish his standing. I think James, and I said this on the show last week, I'm a huge fan of his career. And if it wasn't for injury, he might have already been inside the top 50. I think he's a terrific talent, but I probably never quite earmarked him maybe to be our number one ranked player. But we'll wait and see. And Milman is getting old, according to one texter. Well, the reality is, each year we tick over one more year, and he's, what, 33, 34. So it's going to be tougher for Johnny going forward, no doubt. And he, as you'll hear with Ilya Marchenko a little bit later on, has done it pretty tough, having been on the road. He left Brisbane in January this year. He hasn't been home. It's been tough for a lot of the Aussies. Oh, indeed. And if you are part of our social channels, you have a chance to win quite a bit. So make sure you're following us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, because our latest prize that we gave away was the Yonex V-Core racket. And that went to Gerald Hensley, who's up on the Gold Coast tonight. Gerald, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Now, tell me a little bit about your own tennis background. You play it there, family. Just give us a bit of a feel for your passion for tennis.
I've always loved tennis, but now my kids are involved. It's grown heaps on me. So we're practicing 1 hour, 2 hours a day. So this new racket is going to be gold. I'm using a 15-year-old racket at the moment, passed down by the neighbours. So, grateful for this new racket.
No, magnificent. We'll be shipping that to you very shortly. And beautiful climate to be playing tennis on the Gold Coast, Gerald, most of the time, I would have thought.
Oh, 32 degrees today, so I'm struggling, but the little man powering away, he doesn't stop.
How old is he, young fella?
He's eight.
Okay. What's his best asset? Is there what's it, forehand, backhand? What do you like?
He's loving his backhand, but he's got the forehand, Nick Kyrgios forehand kind of flick wrist action going.
Right. What's his name?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Xander McVee Hensley.
Nice work. Okay, we're going to keep an eye on this young man, and feel free to send us any clips too, Gerald, because we love the young talent coming through. And just finally, have you got a favourite player you love watching?
Definitely Nadal. Yep. Loving Nadal, or any Aussie obviously playing, but Nadal's always been the favourite.
Let's hope there's a bit more life left in Rafa and get back for the Australian
Open.
Hey, Gerald, well done. Congratulations. Keep following us on our socials. Keep listening into our show, which you can do from the Gold Coast on the SCN app, of course, and enjoy that racket when it comes your way.
Thank you again.
Gerald Hensley, winner of our V-Core Yonex racket competition. And plenty more competitions coming up, so keep an eye on our socials, our show here, and you certainly could be a winner. I'll tell you what, because we are the record number of days in lockdown for this beautiful city, the livable city, Melbourne, that we are broadcasting from tonight. I've said this a few times. You couldn't get me on a plane somewhere quick enough. If I could get to Indian Wells right now, I'd be there in a heartbeat. It is probably my favourite tournament. I went there in 2018, 2019, and it is simply glorious.
Oh, you're not mistaken. Everything you've heard is true. Rub your eyes, blink, and soak it up. An oasis in the desert. A garden of plenty. It's beautiful, and it's why everyone is here. Heart-pounding action under the brightest lights. an electrifying stage that never disappoints. You see the desire and feel the intense pursuit. All the biggest stars chasing glory. This is the place. This is Indian Wells. This is the BNP Paribas Open. And this is Tennis Paradise.
Oh, yes, it's Tennis Paradise, all right. Absolutely. That crowd roar, you can hear right across the precinct, just bouncing off the mountains. It's about 2.5 hours inland from Los Angeles. Earlier today, because it is currently, I think, just after 2 a.m. in the morning in Indian Wells, I did catch up with Shad Powers, who's a sports columnist with the Desert Sun, desertsun.com, who will have wall-to-wall coverage, including news, features, photo galleries online over the next fortnight, desertsun.com. And I did catch up with Shad a few hours ago ahead of qualifying starting tomorrow morning our time.
2021 March came around and it didn't happen, and it felt like we were going to have to go a whole 3 years until next March, but they decided to have this fall version. Should be interesting. It's kind of set up a lot of interesting storylines that we don't usually have here. We're riding on the heels of the US Open, so there's some interesting players that people know about now that maybe they didn't before. So everything about it is unusual for us here, but we're happy to have it. I think it'll be a little hotter to start. The truth is March and October are pretty similar. You're usually going to have, you know, the high during the day, maybe we'll be in the 90s. And then, you know, down to 70 at night. So I think it'll be something like that. We're looking, you know, now we can actually see the 7 day forecast, and it looks pretty beautiful, actually. Temperatures are going to be in the low 90s and high 80s during the day. And it's real dry here, so you never get that humidity. It is a desert. So I think we're catching a break, to be honest. It could be 100 degrees right now, but, you know, it's not. It doesn't look like so. I think we're going to end up pretty lucky with the weather wise. It never rains, so we're good on that, knock on wood. But yeah, the truth is that March and October actually end up being quite similar.
In terms of events, sporting events outside of sport, you have a lot of big, you know, music festivals in your part of the world and other different things that go on. Where does the tennis sort of rate as an event that comes to this part of the world each year?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I think in March, you know, like you said, we have sort of a set schedule. We have these big events every year and they kind of lead right into each other. March is the BNP. And then you go right after that into, we have a major LPGA event, the ANA Inspiration, you know, the one where they jump in the pond at the end. That's right after, usually. And then you go into the music festivals, Coachella and Stagecoach. So we have sort of, they're all lined up usually in March and April. Now here we are, it's kind of out on its own in October. But this is sort of like in the summer, everybody kind of leaves town in June, July, August. It's just too hot here and there's no events here. And then everybody kind of comes back right about this time. So I'll be interested to see the crowd. It is, in fact, a lot of the people, you know, what we call snowbirds here, people that live in Canada or the northern United States that live here during the winter. They usually arrive in November. So I'm interested to see if a lot of them will come back early for the tennis tournament. So that's one of the big storylines, actually, is how big the crowds will be compared to what they are in March. But as far as big events here in Southern California, one thing that's different is they'll be going up against NFL games on Sundays, and including the championship Sunday. So that'll be something they haven't had to contend with before. Other than that, I think pretty exciting, and definitely in our neck of the woods, it's the only thing in town these next 2 weeks, and it should be pretty big.
And to the tennis itself, we've learnt, obviously, of Aryna Sabalenka testing positive to COVID, which is a real shame for her because she's been extremely durable, hardly misses a week on tour, and would have been one of the real fancies to win over the next couple of weeks with no Ash Barty and Osaka not playing. We know Serena wasn't likely to play anyway. What about your thoughts just on the on-court action and on the men's? There's a few missing, but it's still a pretty good field.
Yeah, there's no doubt that's a big storyline for us here, is who's not going to be here. Of course, the big three men not going to be here, which will be the first time. It's kind of interesting. This will be the first time since the year 2000 where Federer, Nadal, or Djokovic is not in the field. So that's 21 years where we've had at least one of those guys to kind of be an anchor to the men's field. On the women's field, exactly like you said, we're going to miss Ash Barty, Serena, Venus, Osaka. None of those women are going to be there. And like you said, now Sabalenka. So get that out of the way off the top. Unfortunately, there's a lot of big names that are not going to be in the field that, you know, normally we would expect to be there in March. Who is in the field? You're right. Of course, is still a bunch of great players. The defending champion, if you want to call it that, all the way back to March 2019 is Bianca Andreescu.
Yeah.
She's in the field, of course, and she is sort of finally rounding into shape. I actually had a nice opportunity to have an interview with her, and she said, you know, she's had a tough 16 months basically with injuries and COVID cancellations and things like that, but she feels like she's finally got her game back, feeling healthy. So I think she might be a candidate to win here. Also, she has a lot of support. There's a lot of Canadian fans that live here in the desert. You know, the other top women, you just sort of have to, I was impressed with someone like Maria Sakkari at the US Open. Of course, we've got those two teenage stars that emerged at the US Open. Raducanu was given a wild card, so she's in the field. Leila Fernandez, Canada, also in the field. That's kind of what I was referencing before. We're catching the wave of US Open, which we don't, you know, obviously we're not usually in this part of the schedule. So that's been a nice boon. Names like Raducanu and Fernandez are going to be exciting draws, and which the field needed, to be honest. So I think that'll be exciting. On the men's side, we have, you know, we'll have Daniil Medvedev, of course, riding off as US Open champion. Got to consider him the favorite. You know, Sisyphus, most of the top men outside the big three are here, so you can kind of count on those guys to be contenders.
Indian Wells has got such a great history, and having been to the event twice, I mean, it is probably, I think, the most spectacular setting in tennis. Monte Carlo, I might argue that they've got a pretty good setting with the Mediterranean backdrop, but the desert, the mountains, the atmosphere this tournament generates, you've got that huge sort of soccer pitch area where a lot of the players prepare and get ready for matches. And the fans just have so many great vantage points, don't they? Have you got some standout memories of Indian Wells over the years?
Yeah, it's great. Exactly like you said, the players always sort of vote it their most favorite tournament because of the things you said. It's got a big tournament atmosphere. It's sort of like they like to call themselves the fifth slam. And the players agree that they love it. It's got the perfect combination, I think, of legitimacy and bigness, but at the same time, it's sort of in a smaller, more laid back atmosphere. So I think it's not quite as like in London or New York or whatever. It's not like that here. It's laid back. And so, like you said, you'll see the players just hanging out and kicking the soccer ball around in the grass pitch. Fans can just sort of get really close on the practice courts and things like that. And you'll see kids lining up, unfortunately not this year, like I described earlier, but, you know, autographs. It's just a really fun place to see a tournament, definitely. And, you know, like you said, the weather, or like I was saying, the weather's always nice, but there are some great vantage points. There's a main stadium called Stadium One, and then they built a Stadium Two just within the last 5 years. And I really like that one. It's a smaller stadium, so there's intimacy with the tennis, but then also the views are just spectacular over there. So if you are coming out, want to try a different look than just being in the main stadium, I would suggest sitting in the top of Stadium Two and look around.
Anyone who loves tennis has got to put Indian Wells on their itinerary. Coming from Australia, it's a nice flight to Los Angeles, which is not too bad for us. Us Aussies are used to going on long flights, but then hire the car. And once you get out of the hustle and bustle of LA, it is one of the most spectacular drives, isn't it, Chad?
It is beautiful. You're right. You can hit up Joshua Tree while you're here. That's a beautiful spot. You're driving through. We've got all those, our famous sort of like field of windmills that you have to drive through to get to Indian Wells. Palm Springs itself is beautiful and kind of a fun tourist town. A lot of hotels and restaurants and stuff. So it really is a great place to visit. And you kind of hit the nail on the head. We do get a lot of visitors from Los Angeles and San Diego that kind of make it a special part of their year to come here for the tennis tournament. So it is a great event. We're excited to finally have it back after we did the math. It's 932 days since it was last here. So it'll be fun to finally tomorrow with the qualifying rounds, have it start back up. And, you know, definitely looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, Brett. It's been nice to be on the show. Yeah. Tennis fans, come on out. I know it's not easy to come out from Australia, but in general, if you're listening to this, yeah, make a trip. It's still beautiful out here.
Oh, it's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. Go on a road trip from LA, stop into Indian Wells, you can keep going to Phoenix, go right across the country. It is spectacular. Indian Wells, quality start tomorrow. Rina Rodionova, Lisette Cabrera, Priscilla Hahn, Maddie Inglis, and Astra Sharma from an Australian perspective. We'll have the men's draw coming up tomorrow for the quality. So Bolt, Kokkinakis, Vukic, Kubler in the frame there to play in the qualifying. And as Shad mentioned, no kids under 12 are allowed. So when I went to Indian Wells, the young kids, the autograph hunters, loved it, but they're not eligible to be vaccinated at this stage, and you have to have the double dose to get into Indian Wells. So all that to play out, of course, over the next 14 days. We'll have plenty of activity on our social media. And even though it's a long haul at this stage of the year, when most of the players have sort of departed the US and over in Europe, a lot of it to trek back now, it's so valuable to be in a Masters 1000 for a lot of players chasing points. You can go shopping at Tennis Direct tonight, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. Go to their website, tennisdirect.com.au. Use that promo code FIRSTSERVE10. Get the 10% discount. You can't go wrong. Plenty more to come.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With B-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a B-Solar advisor. Visit b.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to the First Serve. Brett Phillips tonight, 1-300-736-736. Dial that number. You can have a chat to us tonight. Will it be on ESPN Indian Wells? No, be in sports on Foxtel. So that's where you'll find it. Amazing mountains in the background of the desert. Absolutely. Maybe we need to organise a First Serve Indian Wells tour. Oh, that's got me thinking. I'd love to bring some people along. It is spectacular. I'm hoping to be able to watch Max Purcell at the Australian Open. Great that Thanasi is playing at the moment. Yes, absolutely. 21 tournaments this year. It's good to see him out on court regularly. The body's holding up pretty well. Great article on our website in the last few days, COVID-19 and the Next Generation, written by Roddy Reynolds, fine tennis player himself, exceptional writer at thefirstserve.com.au. Roddy, nice to have you on your radio debut.
Brett, thank you for having me.
Tell us a bit about the article. You did chat to Paul Vassallo, of course, Director of Talent at Tennis Australia, because this has been a really tough period for a lot of players who would normally play the Australian Pro Tour, who are a little older, who haven't been able to travel, haven't been able to play domestically, but also just overall for the next generation who have suffered a little bit, particularly here in Melbourne more so because of the closure of tennis clubs. But just give us a bit of a feel for the article you wrote.
Yeah, well, by and large, the article was, I guess, driven by our experiences here in Melbourne. We haven't been able to get on court as much as we'd like, and sort of that drove a concern that perhaps the state of Australian tennis may not be as well placed as it otherwise may have been going forward. And I guess what I found was it sort of split into two categories. So you've got people like you and I, Brett, the average player, average coach. We haven't been able to get on court as much as we'd like here in Victoria and in New South Wales, I guess, to a lesser extent as well. Although if you're in one of the other lucky states, it's probably not as much of a concern. But then you've got the elite level talent. And it's actually not as bad as I'd first sort of worried. There have been government exemptions in in New South Wales and Victoria, the two most lockdown affected states. And, you know, pro tour or ITF sort of level talent has been able to get on court and train. And there has, of course, been the UTR series as well. And in terms of the next gen, I guess what that means is that if you've been in Victoria, while you haven't been able to play matches and that sort of thing, what they have been able to do is get out on court with a coach one-on-one through the exemption, work on their technique, build a physical base by doing sort of home gym and going for runs and all that sort of thing. And so what that should mean is that the next generation of talent is not technically flawed, and they should have a game that's able to hold up when they are able to compete with the rest of the world. Director of Talent at TA, Paul, he provided some good perspective that, you'd take COVID, 8 or 10 week COVID blocks of no match practice over an injury any day.
No doubt. Roddy, it's a great read. I'm going to get John Tricky to weigh in just a tick, but head to thefirstserve.com.au, COVID-19 and the Next Generation. You've written some great pieces for our site, and there's plenty more to come by the end of the year. So look forward to your contribution there and on this show, mate. Really appreciate a little bit of a heads up.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Roddy Reynolds, thefirstserve.com.au, one of our feature writers. Going to welcome in John Tricky, who needs no introduction. Of course, played on the Pro Tour. He's I looked through his resume today, winning state junior titles in all age groups, trained 4 years in the elite squads at Kooyong under the great Harry Hopman and Neil Fraser. Pro Tour, as I mentioned, for 7 years. He's been coaching for a long time through Tennis Australia and the last few years, of course, managing the Bayside Tennis School down in Williamstown. He's been doing some work with Luke Saville, and also we'll talk about Jeremy Beal, who he's a massive fan of. Hey, John, great to have you on the show.
Hi, Brett.
Just a quick thought, just on the back of Roddy's comments there in the article. I know you had a little read of that today, and just your own thoughts on where you see the situation here in Australia.
Look, it's a very difficult time for anyone involved in tennis, and from every level. I mean, the top players who managed to get away have found themselves basically stuck away, and they've had to probably have extended tours. I know Luke left in February, and he's still over there. And he'll stay the whole year overseas because it's just been impossible for them to come back and have their few week break or their few week little, you know, top up with the coach to work on a few things. So it's been a tough year for that level. But the level, though, that I think it's really hit is the 16, 17-year-old kids who probably would have gone and played ITF tournaments over in, you know, overseas. I looked at the rankings. We've got one player in the top 100, boy or girl. It's a boy who's ranked 31, Philip Sekulic, and we don't have a girl in the top 100 ITF, which is, you know, normally we would have, you know, 10 or 15 Australians in the top 100 in both ITF rankings. So that level, I think, has probably copped it the worst. And for the younger kids who would, you know, be staying in Australia and training, while it probably seems like a horrible thing for them to you know, not be able to play for 10 weeks, what I found after each lockdown was that when they came back, they were incredibly keen to play. And, you know, I think once we get through this horrible time, I don't think it will affect them in the long run.
All that to play out. And we'll keep discussing this on the show, the situation here in Australia. We've got a few more weeks before we close up at the end of November to pull apart the game a little bit more domestically. So with tennis back in Victoria, you're down there at Bayside. I mean, it's just great to have the courts reopen again, John.
Oh, look, I'm getting, you know, lots and lots of calls from all the members who have been dying to get back and play. And, you know, it's been very tough that members of clubs haven't been able to play tennis. But it's, you know, they've copped it on the chin. But every time we've reopened, you know, we've come back pretty strongly. You know, the coaching side can sometimes take a little bit to build up. But, you know, we'll be coming into some better weather soon, and I'm sure that will happen as well. But, you know, the kids who are keen on tennis are the first ones on the phone wanting to get back on court.
Now, John, when I ran into you at Paul McNamee's book launch at Royal South Yarra a number of weeks ago now, we were talking about Jeremy Beal. And on the weekend, he won his eighth ITF doubles title this year. So he's 42-2 win-loss in doubles. He's 37-15 win-loss in singles, basically coming back from scratch to rebuild the ranking. I believe it's his birthday today. He's been in South Africa the last couple of weeks. But a couple of words from you just stuck in my ears. You had a bit to do with him when he came down to Bayside, and you're a massive fan of him as a talent.
Look, he just had such a big game with so much potential, and I'm really happy to see that he's doing well at that level. The interesting thing, though, that even with all the success that he's having at that level, his ranking isn't going to get to the point where it'll get him into, you know, the bigger tournament. So my hope for him is that at some stage through the summer, he'll get his chance in the big tournaments that we have in Australia and be able to do something there, because his game is very good. You know, big server, big shots, great athlete. You know, I'd be surprised if given the opportunity, I'd love to see him break through and really get his ranking up there.
It'd be nice. Yeah, we've been tracking him. We've spoken to him a number of weeks ago when him and Tom Fancutt took off for Tunisia. And yeah, it's tough going, certainly at that ITF level, to really build. And all you can do is just keep trying to win as many matches as you possibly can. It's tough, though.
Yeah, it's very tough at that level. You know, it's tough to break out of. Yep. And even with all that success, you know, he'll still need some assistance to play the bigger events.
No doubt. John, time on the wing for me, but I'd love a longer chat. We might even get you in the studio before the end of November, and let's have a longer chat about tennis, but appreciate a few of your insights tonight.
I'd love to do that, Brett, and sign me up for your Indian Wells tour, mate.
It'd be a big bus, I reckon. In fact, a big bus, big plane load. I reckon everyone would want to come to Indian Wells. John Trickey, a legend. I did run into him at Paul McNamee's book launch, and we'll have a longer chat. A break. We'll come back with all the news re the Australian Open.
Better solar, better batteries, better energy. With V-Solar, you'll never have to pay another expensive electricity bill. Talk with a V-Solar advisor. Visit v.solar to learn more. GLG Greenlight Group, leaders in property services and open space management. At glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to The First Serve. Ilya Marchenko from Ukraine. He's got his own YouTube channel.
Hello everyone, Ilya Marchenko here, your favorite tennis YouTuber. Have you noticed that Australian tennis players are a bit crazy? Don't want to mention any names here, but you should kind of guess who I'm talking about. But do you actually know how difficult it is to be a tennis pro from Australia, especially these days, with world pandemic going on and stuff? They can't go back home for almost a year. So I've talked to a couple of my Australian friends about it. Two friends, to be exact. And not the one you think of. But these two are crazy enough as well. Everybody call you JP. But why? Why do people call you JP?
Because it's short. It's shorter than my first name.
What is your first name?
Jean-Patrick.
John and then Patrick. Okay. Who is Patrick?
Me.
Morning, Patrick.
So your parents couldn't figure out which name to choose and they just put two?
I think they decided John was too original. So if they put a hyphen and put Patrick on it, then it sounds more like exotic.
So you are exotic then?
Exotic name, yeah.
Okay. Today we are talking about mental health. When was the last time you was to Australia?
Oh, it was, my home is Brisbane. It was January the 14th. I had to get down to the Melbourne bubble pretty early.
Well, it's pretty long time. Could you explain me why? I mean, I know why, but maybe my viewers, they not educated on these matters either.
Yeah, look, our country doesn't let me in pretty much.
The answer is no.
It's a 14-day hard quarantine, obviously with COVID. Our country being an island, they've been very strict, and you do 14 days in a hotel room, no windows that open. It's tragic and not so good for your tennis. We saw some tennis players at the Australian Open struggling, not being able to get outside. And so I just haven't had the opportunity to get home yet. And flights are like $25,000 right now. So
and everything you have to pay for this hotel yourself?
Yeah, that's another $3,000. So we're looking at 28 grand to get home and then 2 weeks and then probably on a plane out of there the next day because unfortunately I've got to make a few more points.
On a trip for 6 weeks in the States and yeah. I was getting crazy already. Do you think this is the reason why you Australian tennis players are all a bit crazy?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, some not elite.
Some are even more crazy than others, yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah. I'm not pointing any fingers, not looking at you, Bernie. But look, some of the players are a little bit more crazy. But yeah, look, I think this year it's made everyone just on edge a little bit. And I'll be the first to admit I'm a little bit homesick and I'm normally pretty tame, but maybe I'm turning into a bit of a Bernie.
Don't play tennis.
Thank you very much, Bernie. At the end, Elliot Marchenko, very nice YouTube channel. Tennis marketer dedicated to helping tennis businesses around the world grow online. So get your website, social media pages professionally set up for you by experts who know tennis. Visit tennismarketer.com.au. Australian Open 2022, January 17 to 30, locked and loaded at Melbourne Park. I won't be going anywhere but Melbourne. My understanding is that the 2 week lead up to the AO has two scenarios at play. Everything in Melbourne in the last year, like last year, or a combination of Melbourne and also Sydney. So what it's going to look like will come down to quarantining and what a player has to do in Australia first, which is either 7 or 14 days. So 14, first week of training, second week tournament, third week free to move in the community after, of course, day 15. The players' first week could be split into Melbourne and Sydney, with Sydney having the capacity to take more international arrivals. Koo Yong, still hopeful, has to make a decision in the next 3 weeks, reacting to what the final decision will be about the lead-ins to the Australian Open and what access they can get to players, and the bubble is going to make that a little difficult. Qualifying, this is not a big secret. I think it's well out now. Not official, but it looks like the Aussie players are certainly preparing again to play qualies overseas in the Middle East in that late December period. Very surprised, I was told today, if that certainly does change. So the Australian Open locked and loaded for here. Just got to work out what the 2 weeks leading in. I get a feeling that Melbourne and Sydney certainly could split it. A lot of tournaments at Melbourne Park last year all on top of each other. We'll wait and see how it all unfolds. Keep an eye on our socials, our website. We'll talk to you next Monday night.